first in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
The joys of live radio. We had a couple of gremlins, but we are working it out. Welcome to a Friday, February 4th, 2022, and there's a lot of global warming running across the country. A lot of people with snow and sleet and hail, and that never stops the left on their appointed rounds of blaming everything on global warming and climate change. Yeah, we have climate change. It's called the weather. I started off with a fit and start to tell you some good news. The good news is the corporate big tech censors are failing. Alex Berenson reports February 3rd, Facebook shares are getting crushed. This was yesterday. Down almost, can you believe this, 25%. The company's value has fallen today more than Boeing and General Motors are worth. Why? And this is a tweet from Alex Berenson. You make your own determination. For the first time ever, the number of Facebook users is shrinking. The ridiculous rebranding to Meta platforms probably didn't help. Apparently, deplatforming every person and group who is not woke, who has a non-woke thought, isn't working out so well for Mark Zuckerberg. How about that? So when people say there are more of us than there are of them, that isn't just a platitude or a cliche. That's really, really true. It's true. And people are figuring it out. Those that want to shut you down for simply asking questions, debate, not only are they infantilizing you, treating you like a child, but they're also robbing you of your freedom. Without the First Amendment, without free expression, we have no freedom at all. Which brings me to what I really wanted to talk about on this Cash Friday. Go out, spend some cash on Cash Friday, would you? And that is, I'm working on a piece right now on my website at KarenCataline.com about slavery. It's time to start talking about slavery again. The left thinks that they have a monopoly on the discussion about slavery. They think slavery is only what happened to Black people. And that's not all it is. Now, let me just read you the definition of slavery. And by the way, we are going to be addressing the whole Whoopi Goldberg issue because it's so delicious on so many levels. I have a couple of opinions, but I'm having a wonderful guest in about 5-6 minutes that will should be fascinating discussion here about that. The reason I bring that up is because Whoopi Goldberg thought, apparently thinks, since there's so much attention given to Black slavery, which it was atrocious, and America has fought a war over it. You can debate that question if you like. Whoopi Goldberg, who's really quite the ignoramus, believes that's the only thing that constitutes racism, and that's that Black people have some sort of a monopoly on racism. No, they don't. Racism and bigotry is racism and bigotry. That's why the left tried to let you think that any kind of racism and bigotry against anybody but Black people is somehow wrong and incorrect. But I say that by way of explaining that a lot of people think that there is a certain special definition of slavery. Slavery is the practice or institution of treating other human beings like legal property, like a state of subjection of a slavery. I'm reading this out of the dictionary. The reason I think this is so, so very important is because when you single out a group of people, I don't care if it's based on class or race or anything else, you are creating the early conditions of slavery, of owning other human beings and forcing them to live as you would like. We thought the 60s and the left were anti-slavery, but apparently they're okay with slavery as long as they enslave the right people. How about anti-slavery for all and free markets? I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to introduce you to our guest. We're going to continue this conversation right after this. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio and at KarenCataline.com.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
We continue our conversation here on Spouting Off Friday, BBS Radio, K-Star Radio Network, and all across America. Just tune in at KarenCataline.com. We continue our conversation. We'll start out with a little bit about Whoopi Goldberg, but I found a wonderful guest to discuss this and a good many other issues as they relate to, well, the Jewish people and bigotry. No one has a monopoly on bigotry, unfortunately, and the people pointing the fingers are the ones that seem to be most guilty of it. Welcome to Scott Shea, author of Good Faith, Questioning Religion and Atheism, and it's a Mosaic Author's Best Book of 2018 and a finalist for a National Jewish Book Award. And Getting Our Groove Back, How to Energize American Jewry. Can't wait to hear all about that. Scott is co-founder and chairman of Signature Bank. His essays have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Daily News, Bloomberg, The Hill, Jewish Week, and a whole lot more. Welcome, Scott Shea, to Spouting Off.
Karen, it's a pleasure to be with you. And I just want to mention my newest book, which is, for better or for worse, super-duper timely. It's called Conspiracy U,
yes.
A Case Study. And that's about how conspiracy theories about Jews are masquerading as scholarship on campuses all over the country.
You know what? That was the original reason that I invited you on. I'm going to take a leap and say you're probably Jewish. Are you probably Jewish?
I am, and I'm the son of a Holocaust survivor.
Right, and I should know that. I am a fellow MOT, and that, for the listeners, is member of the tribe. It's so interesting that there are actually conservative Jews in the world. And that was the main thing I wanted to delve into, because I myself, in my travels as a Jewish conservative talk show host, have been coming up against some of those conspiracies. Before we do that, however, we just got to talk a little bit about Whoopi Goldberg, because I've been asked about it on radio shows all week. And I just want to set it up this way. There are two schools of thought about this on the conservative side. One is stop supporting censorship, and let people stop watching that stupid show to begin with. But why does ABC or anybody else get to be the final arbiter of what's true when the other people on the stage there believe in 57 genders, et cetera, et cetera? The second school of thought is mutually assured destruction. If you censor one of ours, we're going to censor one of yours. I'm not sure I agree with that. But what are your thoughts about Karen Johnson, who interestingly took the name Whoopi Goldberg, saying what she did on The View and then getting suspended for it? Now she's threatening to quit. I'm not sure anybody cares. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think what she said, I've really focused on more of what she said than the sort of intramurals going on at ABC. Mm-hmm. I do think there's no question that the mainstream media, ABC and others, are more or less aligned with progressive views these days. And what I talk about in my book, as a matter of fact, a fair amount, is that what happens on campus doesn't stay on campus anymore. It's not like Vegas. So you used to have situations where you couldn't have stand-up comedians on campus. You had self-censorship. 2/3 of students on campus have felt that they've had to self-censor themselves, because if they didn't, they'd get in trouble and got canceled, etc. Certainly that's the case with faculties. And where it's 12-1 progressive faculty versus conservative faculty. So what you have is that these trends are now taking over in journalism and taking over in entertainment and media. And that's why I think it all started, frankly, on campus. If you look at all of these trends, where did they start? They started on campus. They started in academia. And so many people didn't pay enough attention to that. And mm-hmm. now, when individuals and others are at risk of getting canceled, they're wondering where this all came from.
Well, it does come from an enormous amount of left-wing politics, because leftists and liberals, leftists having controlled the Democrat Party, have made Jew hatred part of their platform, for heaven's sake.
But, you know, where did that even come from? Let's not forget, the Democratic Socialist Party was founded, and one of its express reasons for founding was that it was going to be not against Israel when it was founded in the 70s. And so the question is, which surprises people, because don't forget, it's only in the last 10 years or so that even the Democratic Socialist Party has become ardently anti-Israel. So where are these notions coming from? And again, the Democratic Party did not used to be used to be very much Israel supporters.
They also used to be pro-female, and I mean, we could go down a litany of things that the left used to stand for that no longer do they, such as free speech and not censoring people, on and on and on it goes. But so what's your answer? You're saying it all started on the college campus?
I think there's really little doubt of that if you look at the evidence. I mean, it trickled out of campus. The notions of what are supposed to be journalism versus advocacy came from the schools. There's ample evidence of that. And that's what worries me, is that these trends are not getting better on campus. They're getting worse.
No,
and they somehow
not.
Seem to come back time and time again to Jews, which is remarkable.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, this is the $69,000 question. It keeps getting higher and higher.
Inflation.
That I'd like you to wax philosophic with all of our time, this conversation, because I took a look at your background and what you've written on, and I thought you're the perfect person to ask this question.
Karen's flattery will get you everywhere. Thank you.
Let me see if I can make it succinct, because I'm going to go out on a limb here and tell just a little bit of a story. I had to step down from a panel show that was supposed to be all conservative women. You're going to love this part of the story. And this happened, I don't know, a couple months ago, whenever it was. And I was confronted at the very end of the show with one of the other conservative ladies pulling out her favorite book to, and I had no way of even rebutting it, even if I'd wanted to. Conservative now, liberty loving, her favorite book is The Protocols of the Elders of Zion. I say that by way of saying that a good many conservatives who are looking at globalism, the broader picture of the kind of Marxism, socialism, communism that is being imposed on the free world, it's astonishing that we're living to see it. They talk an enormous amount about the Rothschild Bank. Whenever I hear Rothschild's Bank, I generally think, okay, here comes the Jew hatred.
Right.
The first story was really off beyond the pale. But there's a good many very well-meaning conservatives who lay all of it at the feet of the Rothschilds, of certainly the banks. And I would love to hear you talk about this at some length.
Well, first of all, The Protocols of the Elders of Zion is largely, about a third of it is plagiarism from a novel, a French novel by Maurice Jollet, which was lampooning Napoleon III. So let's start out with that. Someone took as their template a fiction novel. Someone in Russia took a fiction novel, used literally the exact same words. This is not like, you know, oh, it's similar, it's this, it's that. And then added a whole bunch and used it as a template for a whole bunch of hatred because they just didn't really feel like working that hard writing a book. This has been, so first of all, there's nothing to it. Even when it was done, even when it was promoted by the czarists, and this is the key to thinking and remembering about conspiracy theories about Jews, is that the people who are making it know that they're lying, but they know that they can find enough susceptible people in the world to believe bunk, and the easiest way to hack into human beings' brains is to provide them with conspiracy theories. We should go off on that a little bit too, but I just want to come to the answer about, I want to finish the first part, and then I want to come back to what conspiracy theories are.
And let me just add, with The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, they were used to justify the pogroms, the Holocaust.
Yes.
Many people still today believe that it's justified to persecute and punish the Jewish people as a whole because of these false charges.
For sure, and this is the history of,
yeah.
Look at the Simon of Trent. It was the first major publicized blood libel against Jews, which was used as a reason to wipe out Jews in the town.
Right.
The person who promulgated that, this fellow who was a bishop prince in the area, Johannes Hinderbach, knew what he was doing. I mean, that's the thing about the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. That's the thing about, by the way, the Amnesty International report. The people who are writing this generally know that they're creating propaganda, but it is so effective. And it's so effective against minorities like Jews.
Yeah. Before we get to the Rothschilds, I want to ask you real quick, do you consider yourself a conservative thinker who recognizes what's going on in the world in terms of what I said, the globalism, people deciding that they're going to control other people's lives, particularly in free countries? I mean, is this resonating with you before we go here? Because people are searching for some of these stories. They become conspiracy. I mean, forgive me. The old conspiracy theories, some of them are coming true. Not all. I've never been a propagator of conspiracy theories, but some of them are coming true in terms of the infiltration of Marxists into our country, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's a lot bundled into what you said. First of all, fundamentally, I consider that I want to talk to people across the spectrum. So as long as you're not far, you know, right, you're not alt-right, and as long as you're not, you know,
that's
crazy
a made-up
left,
term, alt-right. The left made up that term.
Well, Richard Spencer made up that term, and
Richard Spencer was an Obama supporter, but that's beside the point. And that's not a conspiracy, as far as I know. But Richard Spencer, very interesting history there, which does not mean there isn't Jew hatred on the right. Forgive me.
Yeah, there is definitely Jew hatred on the right.
There always has been.
Richard Spencer says it out loud. So there's clearly. He clearly doesn't like, he criticizes, as a matter of fact, people on the right who aren't sufficiently against Jews in Israel. But having said that, there's a broad spectrum in the middle of people who haven't been told what to think but are trying to actually think for themselves. And those are the people I want to talk to. Because folks who don't want to listen to the other side, even if it's only to sharpen their own argument, that's where I have a problem. So I'm in that much disabused place, which is the broad center.
Okay. Let's talk about the Rothschilds for a minute, because it is true the banks are making lots of decisions for a lot of people. But as soon as you hear the Rothschilds, do you immediately think, here comes the conspiracy theories, or what do you think about that?
There's no question about it. If you Google, on the first page of a Google search, if you Google some of the things you're talking about, some of the various terms, the first page is a list of quote-unquote Jewishly controlled banks, which, by the way, are lists of the bank, the Central Bank of Iran, the Saudi Arabian Bank. Every bank, people who are sworn Qatar's bank, who are, you know, fund Hamas, are listed. It's a pure conspiracy theory. There is no central bank that's controlled by the Rothschilds, period, full stop. The Rothschilds, as many bankers during the Middle Ages, because Christians weren't allowed to lend to each other, they didn't have the same sort of worldwide trusted networks. Some of banking, not a good chunk, was done by families such as the Rothschilds. There is literally no truth. You can get a report on every bank in the United States and find out who owns them.
Listen, we've got to take a quick break.
Yep.
We're going to continue this conversation right after this break with Scott Shea. He's disabusing people of some of their conspiracy theories on Spouting Off. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back to Spouting Off Friday. It's Cash Friday, so go out and spend some cash or do it during the week. Spend your cash so that people don't track you simply because you are buying and selling. Yes, I use those references occasionally. We're talking to Scott Shea, author of the book Conspiracy U, a case study. And we're talking particularly about people on the conservative side, and I come upon them all the time. They think, and thank you for staying with us, Scott. We really appreciate it.
A pleasure.
They think that the Protocols of the Elders of Zion is exactly what it is. It's a fraud. It was used to murder Jews. But when it comes to the Rothschilds Bank and the bankers, they do believe that. And it's coming out more and more as we see this move towards globalism and people trying to fill in the blanks with what's happening with COVID and shutting people down, shutting businesses down, forced vaccinations, these kinds of things we've never seen in a free in the free West before, and we're seeing it in spades right now. Tell us how that works into the idea of the Rothschilds Bank being behind a lot of this.
Well, again, there's no truth to it. There's no Rothschilds Bank. There are a few banks, investment banks around the world, and banks that are not major banks that still have Rothschild ownership or are have the name Rothschild, but they almost don't exist anymore. And they never were all that powerful. I mean, they were, whenever there was a major bank, in all candor, throughout the Middle Ages, usually sooner or later the sovereign would expropriate all of the value of it. So I just want to be clear, it's a conspiracy theory. There's no truth to it. And I think an important thing, and we're sort of have talked around this a little bit,
sure,
is I think people need to understand what a conspiracy theory is. By the way, why it's so crazy that many of these conspiracy theories are emanating from academia, which is supposed to know better, and how they can gird themselves to figure out if a conspiracy theory is true or not. So here's the thing. You can have a theory about a conspiracy. Let me give you an example, which is a well-known one. You can have a theory that the COVID virus was leaked accidentally, purposely, however you want, from the Wuhan virology lab. So what do you have to do? You're supposed to see if there's evidence. You presumably send people there, check data, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you may come to the position that you can't get enough data, so you don't know for sure. You may have suspicions, but you don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So you can decide, yes, it happened there, no, it didn't happen there, or it's not for sure. What a conspiracy theory is where it takes a non-real facts, connects dots that don't exist, and pulls them together and says that even the lack of proof is more proof that the conspiracy theory is true, because this evil cabal of whoever it is are so good at covering things up.
Can you give an example of that?
Let me give you an example from unfortunately, from Northwestern University, from a far right, neo-Nazi professor, Arthur Butz, a tenured professor at Northwestern University. Unfortunately, I spent I read his whole book, 400 plus pages, called The Hoax of the 20th Century. He claims the Holocaust was made up.
Oh.
And yet he's confronted with evidence that he, as an academic, there are tens of thousands of documents document that show the execution of the final solution. There are minutes from the Wannsee Conference in 1942, the 80th anniversary, which was where the final solution was decided. And there are many people who confessed to being perpetrators, to killing Jews, murdering Jews, to being guards, to being witnesses, et cetera, et cetera. So what does he do? He says this evil cabal of Jews was so smart. And by the way, he says they're really Zionists. They're not, he claims to love Jews but hate Zionists. That they really, really were so smart that they planted all these documents all across Europe in places where just by chance they were discovered. Forged documents, pretty amazing. But these are pretty, but in his view, again, the absence of evidence is proof that he's right. And he says that Jews who barely were around at the Nuremberg trial, bamboozled, to use his word, poor, innocent, humane Nazis into confessing to crimes of humanity that they would have never imagined.
Commit. Oh my
never
God.
Would have made, never committed. And maybe a few Jews died in a typhoid breakout. And the only thing the Jews were put in camps for was to protect them against the Russians. It was for their own good.
It's always for their own good.
Always for their own good. So what he does is any fact to the negative, he expands around. He expands around, and the conspiracy theory negates facts. And look, he says, so on the far right, he's on the far right. He's a neo-Nazi. I don't know whether
how
you want to
care. When you say far right, what does that mean? Is he like, do you think he's a Trump supporter? Is he...
I honestly have no idea what
so
what
why
he is
would he
that.
Be why would he be the far right? I'm curious. Because there's a lot of Holocaust deniers on the left.
So I want to give you an example of another professor, Professor Stephen Salata, who writes that the Nazi Holocaust, I'm directly quoting him here because it's so amazing, in his book Israel's Dead Soul, he says the Nazi Holocaust in Europe seems a direct antecedent to the founding, Israel's founding. There were plans from the outset of Zionism to rid the promised land of its indigenous people. So my point is people who are neo-Nazis and people who are far left end up saying, stunningly, the exact same thing. And that's what, and the conspiracy theories about Jews are, and I do this show this in the book, and it frankly freaked me out, is that they have the pretty much the exact same conspiracy theories about you. So I don't want to get into labels far left, far right, but certainly Butts being a neo-Nazi and Salata being and Thrasher and other professors that I show being Marxists having the same theories is troubling. And
you know what's even – let me just say
what
I'd like to have time for you to expound on is no, Jews don't have a monopoly on any kind of bigotry or racism, whether Karen Johnson thinks so or not. But it is amazing how often, no matter what the problem is, it's usually leads to the Jews. Like when there's strife in the world, what do you have a theory about that? I mean, people have been asking that question for years. Why is it always the Jews? Or is it just I'm extra sensitive to it? It isn't always the Jews. There's the blacks. There's the Armenians. There's the gypsies. There's gays, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the hatred against Jews as an excuse to exterminate them, God forbid, it has held on for an astonishingly long time. Is it because we've just been around so long or what?
No, that's first of all, it's an excellent question, and it's been on the far right with the Nazis, and on the far left, you know, the slogan from the river to the sea, Hamas wants to exterminate or expel every Jew in the Middle East, and Hamas and Hezbollah wants to kill every Jew in the world. They want to murder every Jew in the world. So this is a shared bias from unfortunately diverse groups. And here's what I think, if you want to really know what I think, and I'm going to do it in like a
paragraph and a half. I really want to know what you think.
Okay. So I think, and if your listeners remember one thing, I think it's about idolatry. And most people think idolatry is just about setting, you know, bowing down to a statue or something like that. But really what idolatry is a set of lies about power. It's about ascribing superpower or super authority to finite beings or ideologies. So how did Stalin, and we had these sort of god kings leading these ideologies like Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, the Assad family, the Kim family, Hitler, I could go on. And they used the same tropes as the god king Pharaoh in the Bible. They used poetry, power, pageantry.
Amalek.
They used. Yeah. They had secret armies, secret informers. So they had used state-sponsored violence. So how did Stalin get away with starving a quarter of the Ukraine, killing all the kulaks, sending tens of the millions to the gulag, and nobody questioned him? Because he did use the same tropes as Pharaoh. And here's one thing that every idolater knows, is that there could be a bigger God king. There could be a bigger God. And the Bible and the Jews have represented this notion of one God. And whether that's the God that you like or not, it's a big God. And so people are, to a certain degree, because of the intellectual tradition of the Jews bringing the Bible, they're a natural target for every idolater. And unfortunately, in these days, we've got a lot of God King Pharaohs, from Angela Davis, whatever she says is considered revealed truth by the far left, to a whole host of others. Whatever they say, you notice how everybody falls in line. And unfortunately, the same thing goes true, I hate to say it, with, Patrick Casey and Richard Spencer and Bradley Griffin as well. And look at Michael Penovich, who has a show called The Daily Shoah. People believe what they say. And they say believe it because they consider that they have super authority. And they don't. So they're afraid of the Jews because ultimately Jews represent and the Bible represents, and the whole Bible came to combat idolatry. So that's what I think, Karen. That's a lot.
I think it's a spectacular analysis, and there's so much to unpack there. We can only do so much. It's interesting that the most non-Jewish Jews are Marxists worshiping idols themselves. And I've said for years that Marxism and all of these totalitarian ideologies, including Islamofascism, et cetera, are all trying to compete with or are threatened by God, who gives us free will.
Yep.
Humans who claim to be greater than God never give people free will. They take it away. But God himself gives us free will. That's why I always say we should never expect any less from our government. What do you think about the far-left Marxist Jews that give a lot of us a bad name, who are the least Jewish of all Jews, and yet they're perfect targets for Jew haters who point to them and say, see, they are Marxists. You see how circular it can be. And yet if there's a, I hope this is making sense here, if there is an overt Jew who's dressed in a black hat walking down a street in Crown Heights or Brooklyn, they take the brunt of the Jew hatred that the Marxists never do.
Look, there's no question that people like Norman Finkelstein, Noam Chomsky, Shaul Magid,
Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, George
Soros.
Well,
I don't even have to. I'm giving you academics right now who are certainly anti-Israel and anti-Jew and combat the idea and actually think that there can be no anti-Semitism if a Jew believes in the state of Israel, that it's they deserve whatever they can get. And I think that's even more extreme than, and frankly, the people who you might be mentioning. I mean, I think that's far more extreme. Because if you read some of those folks and think that they not only don't care about their other, their fellow Jews, they enable despicable anti-Semitism against the people who you are, who you were mentioning, who Jews who are just walking down the block but seem to, be overtly Jewish and aren't sitting in the faculty lounge, coming up with new narcissistic ideas.
Yeah, we do have to wrap it up, and it just has gone so fast. But I want to end with people being able to get your book, but also, and you can tell people where to find it. But also, on a more positive note, my parents would never have believed that there are so many evangelical Christians. We can say wise. Some leftist Jews say, they just want to convert us. But it's not up to Christians to keep Jews Jewish. It's up to Jews to keep Jews Jewish. And my parents would never have believed that so many evangelical Christians are overtly pro-Israel and support the Jewish people. And to that, I'm grateful. Quick comment there, and then we'll let you tell everybody how they can get your book.
Well, I think I can join you in that, Karen. My father was a Holocaust survivor, and his town was full of Christians, and they turned in every last Jew. So the turnaround has been remarkable, and I think it should be, a very, very good thing. And I've had the chance to talk to some evangelical Christians who recognize some of the history, and that only strengthens them in being pro-Israel and supporting the Jewish people.
Uh-huh.
In terms of my book, it's available actually anywhere. It's actually going through a second printing right now. It's available on Conspiracy U, is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, basically anywhere that quality books are sold. And you can also get it on my website if you want, but it's just as happy for you to just log on to whatever your favorite bookstore is.
What's your website address?
ScottShea.com.
ScottShea.com.
But welcome to buy it anywhere, because I just want to get the word out. That's really all I'm looking to do. It's really worrisome.
We're living in such extraordinary times that there most certainly is plenty of misinformation. Nobody has a monopoly on the truth completely, but people just need to keep their own counsel. And thank you, Scott Shea, for joining us on this edition of Spouting Off. We so appreciate it.
Karen, have a great day and Shabbat Shalom.
Good Shabbos to you too as well. Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, that about does it for us here on Spouting Off for this week. Tune in every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday when there will be it's at 1 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday and Thursday, WSMN.live. Fridays right here at BBS Radio or the K-Star Radio Network, when there will be so much more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.